The EFINA Podcast, an advocacy tool that seeks to illuminate the financial and economic inclusion challenges, solutions, and advancements in Nigeria. It is the first podcast in Nigeria focusing on this discourse. Join us on this journey.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the EFINA Podcast, one of our advocacy tools that is focused on sharing spotlights, insight on the issues that challenge financial and economic inclusion in Nigeria, and discussing potential solutions that we can use to address those issues. Today, we're going to be discussing the topic, invisible victims. How do we tackle fraud and protect the most vulnerable in Nigeria's digital economy ecosystem? Why is this topic very important today? As digital financial services grow, fraud is also accompanying that growth. And of course, it has disproportionately affected low-income and vulnerable populations. If you look at the digital financial service ecosystem, fraud is a key factor that undermines trust and also causes people who have been included before to become excluded because they do not have trust in the system. If we can protect the vulnerable segment, the ones we call invisible victims, because they are invisible in the sense that they are not seen because they cannot express themselves. They do not have the tools and they live in areas that are hard to reach. If we can protect these people, it therefore means that we can bring them into the digital financial ecosystem. They can have access to digital tools. They can be digitally included. And of course, Nigeria will be one step towards achieving the $1 trillion economy by 2030. So welcome once again to the EFINA Podcast, which is a multi-actor platform that discusses the issues that challenges financial inclusion and economic inclusion. My name is Emmanuel Mukoro. I am the Policy and DFS Advocacy Manager at EFINA. In today's episode, I will discuss this topic with a renowned consumer advocacy and empowerment expert, a professor par excellence, who has spent decades doing advocacy and empowerment work for consumer and also has earned her onions in digital transformation. To do justice, like I said, I will be speaking to the executive director of Consumer Advocacy and Empowerment Foundation, CADEF Nigeria, which is a leading research and advocacy organization focused on consumer protection, empowerment, and digital transformation. She has decades of experience in the academia and policy advisory, and has been a vocal advocate for inclusive financial systems that safeguard vulnerable populations. Her expertise spans digital finance, gender equity, fraud prevention, policy, and this has made her a thought leader on critical issues that shape Nigeria's digital economy. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I welcome Professor Chiso Undukwe Okafor to join me in this conversation. Prof?
Thank you very much for having me.
Prof, before I start, a little icebreaker, right? Mm-hmm. So when you started this journey, let's take a step back and say, for instance, maybe 10 years ago, mm-hmm. and this is 2025.
Okay.
What was the picture on your mind in terms of how you would have envisioned consumer protection to be by 2025?
Okay, just a little bit point of correction. My background is really technology and education. And so upon walking away from that, I took up consumer advocacy. Having moved back into Nigeria, I realized that the consumer was the least heard person. They had the most problems and challenges, but they were the least heard because there was really very little being done for them. Or there was very little awareness on the consumer's part of what rights they had. And so that led me into this fair.
Thinking about when you started the journey,
okay.
Back to my question.
Okay.
With all the issues that okay. you were dealing with that you okay. had to advocate for.
Yes.
What was the picture that by 2025, what were you expecting to see? This is 2025 now.
Okay, I'm a very optimistic person. I didn't believe that all the challenges would disappear, but I believed that the voices, especially of the underserved, that their voices will be amplified. So my push was, how do we amplify voices in the, oh my God, various issues and challenges that a typical Nigerian consumer comes across. And so what I desired is amplification of voices, and as voices have been amplified, policies will either be enforced or created.
Thank you. So, Prof.
Yeah.
Have you seen those changes in today's consumer protection space?
To a certain extent.
Okay.
Not as much as what we would love it to be, but you can't deny efforts being made by the different groups. To a certain extent, yes. It's not where we should be, but we have started the journey.
Let me build on that, Prof. You have background in digital, mm-hmm. right, technology, and by extension, digital transformation.
Yeah.
So bringing systems into place to enhance processes and, you know, activities within the workplace and even businesses mm-hmm. is part of the work that you've always advocated for. And we see that digital transformation happen, revolutionize the Nigerian financial service ecosystem.
Yeah.
However, you cannot talk about the gains of digital transformation in Nigerian financial service ecosystem without a mention of fraud and related consumer protection issues. I am forced to ask, is the word fraud overhyped, or is it that we don't discuss it enough?
It's definitely not overhyped. We don't discuss it enough to have an understanding of what it actually is, because once you hear fraud, you think, oh, somebody cheated me. But it could be that the system itself creates room for these activities to happen intentionally or unintentionally. So it's just, we haven't spoken enough about it so that people can have understanding and have an awareness.
So, Prof, you just said there is a narrow perspective of fraud.
Yes.
From your description.
Yes.
What would then be fraud that a common man can understand?
Well, the common man thinks that if I go and I'm trying to get A, but I'm given B, but I've paid for A, that's fraud. But they forget that they advertised for A, but what they intentionally gave you is B. And you walk away with B thinking that A is what you had received. That's fraud. So fraud spans everything. Getting an airline ticket, supposed to leave at 9. At 8 o'clock, they tell you you've been delayed for 6 hours. That is fraud, because there's no way you did not know that you have a challenge that will take 6 hours for you to fix before canceling or changing my flight time. So fraud is wide. Some is intentional and some aren't. So it's really understanding, looking at the background, what is going on, what was in their head when they started.
Just to build on that, I wanted to ask, how is fraud manifested? And is this different for the vulnerable and excluded segments compared to your likes, Prof, that are well educated?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
No, okay. Fraud is fraud at any level. It's more challenging if you're not aware, or if you don't understand your rights, or you don't even have access to where you can make your, you might have awareness, but you don't have access. Mm. Who do I complain to? Mm. I know I've been cheated, but who do I complain to? How do I go about complaining? When you talk about digital, do they have access to the digital platforms? There's a lot of digital platforms out there. FCCPC, Federal Consumer Protection Commission, has an app where you can go and record whatever it is that you're complaining about. But if you're using a regular tiny phone that doesn't have internet, or you don't have internet access because you don't have the money, even making that level of to go and complain is a challenge. They have only 2 offices or 3 offices. They have a process now in place to try and bring it into all the 36 states. So access to where you can complain is one level. Understanding that you have a right to complain is another level. And where to complain is, yeah. So of course the underserved and the unprivileged ones have more difficulty. But it doesn't mean that the guy in the city
is not a victim of fraud.
Is a victim of fraud, but knows how to go about.
So
the process of redress in Nigeria is one of the most challenging things I've experienced.
I'm going to come back to that process of redress. So describing these invisible victims, so you just gave it a light now. They're invisible because we don't see their grievances captured in the systems.
Definitely.
Because
they
are not aware, they're not literate enough to know what to do. They don't have the systems in place or access to the technology. By using basic phone or feature phones, that's also even excluding them from the mainstream platforms that, regulators.
So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
By not giving me access, is that a level of fraud on the part of the institutions?
Prof, I think I'll flip that to you. Yeah.
Because if I'm in the village and there is no banking system in the village and I'm forced to use an agent, a POS agent, mm-hmm. or I have to walk 2 miles or take a bike 2 miles to another village that has a bank.
That in itself.
Inclusion, the digital financial inclusion or exclusion, depending on how you want to say it, creates a platform that encourages fraud.
How is that?
Because you're not giving me access.
So it's
you. The country says cashless society pushes that agenda from the federal level. The system here does not provide the resources to make it easier for me to engage on what the federal level is demanding of me.
I mean, that's what we call exclusion by design.
Exclusion by design, to a certain extent, is fraud.
We'll come back to that, Pro. We'll come back to that. Let me take you further, right? And just to give you some stats.
Okay.
I mentioned some already. About 6% of microfinance bank users have experienced one fraud or the other related, especially missing of money from their account through card and identity theft. You know, according to a FINA E2F 2023 report also, 2.3 million adults reported a fraud incident that they've experienced at an agent location. Now, this number excludes many vulnerable Nigerians who we call invisible victims that do not have or know the means to report fraud, which is something that you just spoke about now. How does fraud directly or indirectly impact financial exclusion of and consumer welfare of these vulnerable individuals? Two things.
How does
fraud
impact
the inclusion?
The inclusion.
Potential inclusion of these.
Comes from a place of trust. If I don't trust the institution, do you think I'll want to do business with them? Trust becomes the core issue institutions should address, because lack of trust will push me away from one institution to the other institution. So trust, and I don't understand how businesses plan to create and grow if the consumer has no trust in them.
Mm.
There are certain airlines I will not fly because it is guaranteed they will delay. I don't have trust in them anymore.
Are there certain financial service providers you wouldn't use because?
At this point, even my current financial provider.
Is it that bad, bro?
It's that bad. My only challenge is that it's so difficult also to go open an account. They want your grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-great-great-grandfather information, where he was born, what his picture like, what his thumbprints are like, to open an account. They even make it difficult to improve financial inclusion.
So isn't that then counterproductive, because the regulator will tell you these measures are in place so that we can address the issue of potential fraud and risk, you know, that's, you know, an exposed system, right? Or unprofiled customers may post to the system. Now, what you have said is that process is so cumbersome that it even deters the people we're trying to include, deters them from coming into, you know, the space.
And my question is, those that you have profiled and you have put into your system, have they not experienced fraudulent activities? So the profiling is one issue. The issue is your risk mitigation strategy. Are you utilizing technology to enhance the customer experience, or are you denying the opportunity to use technology to enhance your profiling. So it's either way. So if I'm profiled and I'm in your system and I'm still experiencing fraud, so then the cumbersome profiling is not solving the problem. So you need to look internal and address the issues.
Prof, I have a follow-up question to that. And this is really speaking about a potential impact that not addressing fraud, you know, might, you know, cause. Mm-hmm. You spoke about the inclusion side, but perhaps I'll need you to throw more light on how this might then affect the welfare of the consumer. Is there a psychological dimension to it? Is there a social dimension to it?
Okay.
What are the likely manifestations of that impact on the consumer?
I'll categorize it to two different types of consumer.
Great.
The basic type of consumer myself, thinking of going to the bank is a dreadful experience for me. Just the thought process. I keep saying, do I have to? And I only go when I have to, because the experience is so challenging for me. Now, imagine the other category of consumers, persons with disability, whether it's a hearing impairment, a visual impairment, or a physical impairment. 99% of banking halls are on the first floor. There are no lifts or elevators to take an escalator upstairs. Even where it's on the ground floor, the security doors are not wide enough for a wheelchair entry. Even when it's just the ATM, walk around and see. Most ATMs, you have to climb a step or go down a step to get the money. That's somebody with a physical disability. Somebody with a visual impairment walks in, the first security at the door says, "We don't want beggars here." I'm not a beggar. I'm just trying to get to my bank that they're paying my salary into. And the security, if he understands, can take the person and hand them over to another person, if they are lucky. Hearing impairment, they can't even express themselves. There is no hearing impairment desk or a disability desk. So you can say, call in at this time or send a message that you'll be coming so we can have services for you. But yet they have accounts with you.
True.
So that level of disability has created a barrier of exclusion. A blind person goes into the bank. They tell them before you open an account that your salary is being paid into, or they give you an ATM card, you have to go to court and get an indemnity. Only country I've heard that does this. So there is an exclusion by design, not to talk of the elderly. There is such an exclusion by design that needs to be addressed. And this exclusion by design creates opportunity for fraud. A woman went in with her card to take out money. A young lady says, "Oh, you're having challenges. Let me help you." She was blind. She helped her, took the money out. The woman now transferred all the money
left into her
account. Into her own account and walked away. She can't even identify who the person is. We should have security cameras. So there's fraud that is determined just by the design of the system.
So you started describing, you've gone into my next question really, which is, and I will come to addressing these issues that you have highlighted. So maybe we'll wrap up with that. You mentioned people with disabilities. And sometimes even those who live in remote areas, even by living in areas that are hard to reach, is also a disability in itself.
Of course.
So the question then is there something really unique about this invisible segment that, you know, you've described? So yes, a few things which you have answered, their inability to access, where they live, literacy, and all of that. My question then is, how should consumer protection within the digital financial service ecosystem, and by extension, right, the digital economy, how should we then address, you know, approach consumer protection?
There's different levels. There is the regulatory level. In Nigeria, we do have a lot of policies, if I may say so. Mm-hmm. We do have a lot of policies. Where we lack is the implementation, proper implementation of those policies across board. Within those policies, there are penalties, but a lot of those penalties are a pat in the hand. Mm-hmm. If a bank knows that there are some severe penalties that would affect their bottom line, the board of trustees will make sure those banks sit up. Mm-hmm. And then there is the level of enforcement. Enforcement is not across board. It's one time, once in a while, there's enforcement there and there. So there has to be serious risk mitigating strategies, not only from the policy sectors, but from the institutions themselves, the banking institutions themselves, whether it's a digital bank or a physical bank. There has to be risk mitigation. And thank God for AI. Can you take AI to enhance fraud? But you can also use AI to reduce the risk of fraud. But the total summary of it is awareness and education. There has to be an increase on the part of consumers, awareness. Issues like digital financial literacy should be taught right from elementary school, through secondary schools, through university. It has to be done that way. Curriculum has to be changed at curriculums. Sorry to say that. Our curriculum in Nigeria is zero to nil, as far as I'm concerned, on several levels, and needs to be improved.
If you were to access to score Nigeria's consumer protection efforts so far on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put us?
In the digital financial sector?
Yes.
Five.
Why five?
Five, because there needs to be an improvement in enforcement and penalties. And that would push the industry to improve the risk mitigation factors for fraud. And it will also force an increase in awareness and education at every level.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what have we done well? Because you gave us five.
You know, you give five, it's 50%. That's like a D. You know, for me, as an educator, 50 is a D or a D plus. So I'm giving you a five because I'm not saying you are not trying. You attended lectures, you attempted the test, and so you get a five.
So if I were to translate that in real evidence, that means we have policies, like you said.
Yes.
We have the regulators on ground.
Yes, and willing regulators.
Willing regulators.
Yes.
Okay.
But we don't have the enforcement and the penalties. Monitoring also.
Prof, yes. As we're trying to wind up, because it's a short scene, what are your expectations of the Nigerian financial service actors and beyond the point you've made, the regulators, the providers and civil society, even the consumers themselves? Because we cannot protect someone who does not so want to be protected. And when I say that, I mean, if you have said X, Y, Z are your responsibilities, you should hold your part of the bargain. Although there are issues that you have raised to say, people don't even know that X, Y, Z are supposed to be their own responsibility.
Exactly.
Right. So if you look at this piece, you've been doing this from experience of your advocacy campaigns, your consumer empowerment, you know, initiatives that you've driven. What would be your expectation for us to have a sane ecosystem where the consumer has a voice? Because you started by saying we ought to amplify, and that is really what your work is set, you know, how to do. What would then be those expectations you have, right, of the different actors towards ensuring that the vulnerable, and I'm saying vulnerable because of the how we started by saying they don't even have access, they don't have the tools. Mm-hmm. So when we report fraud, it is what is on the system that is reported or is captured in our reports. Those ones who didn't come out to say, I was defrauded, I experienced this, we see them as, you know, legitimate transactions that, you know, nothing was ever wrong with. But yeah, in this sense, there are invisible victims, exactly, you know, that are not seen. So what would you then expect, you know, of the different actors to do within the next 2 years to give us that environment? And these are quick wins, that's how I call them, the next 2 years. Because like what you described is not really rocket science to address.
No, it isn't.
Issue, right? Other clients, markets have done some of these things. So what do we need to do and what steps do we need to take so that no one is digitally excluded because of fraud and the lack of trust, that have bedeviled consumer protection and the Nigerian consumers.
So on the part of consumers, it's important to be educated, to have an awareness, and the little you know, do it. So for example, passwords, update your passwords often. So on that part, we are responsible for our passwords. So we need to update it every 4 months, every 6 months.
Bro, can I ask you a question?
No, I haven't done mine yet.
I wanted to ask if you have ever forgotten your password.
Daily. At my age, you should expect that. But the reality, yes, I forget. So you need to write them down, change them, write it down, change it, write it down. It's helpful because then it minimizes the access people have to into your account on the digital level. In 2 years, what I expect. So for example, last year, I heard a debit alert on my American account. I'm here. So he's using my debit card. I have my debit card with me. All I did was make a phone call. I said, this is not me. Because of what the law says, the bank's obligation immediately credited the money back, did the investigation, found out it was not me, it was a fraudulent, and dealt with it. I didn't have to chase the bank. All I did was a phone call or an email. So the law should say, you report, money comes credited back automatically. Trust me, the bank will sit up. They will sit up with the investigation. They'll minimize the fraud. That's one level. The second level of what banks need to do. And so from the policy perspective, you put a policy that forces the bank to sit up.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that our cybersecurity is horrible. How is it that somebody can get two NINs? It has happened.
Mm.
It was in the news.
Yeah.
Don't quote me. Mm. It was on the news. How did that happen? How are people being defrauded by unscrupulous individuals in the enforcement? Tell them to transfer money and you can't identify where the money was transferred to illegally? So the banks need to up their ante. They up their game in their cybersecurity system.
Mm.
We have people, you have BVN, NIN, and God knows what else. Do you have enough of my details? Cross data exchanges with banks in different African countries. What is happening to my data there? How is it being protected? I mean, there's no transparency on how institutions, the financial institutions, are handling people's data. Have you gone to the bank to open an account or do something and the banking officer takes his phone to photocopy your document? Yes or no? It happens. But he's using his personal phone because the bank's photocopy machine is not working or fax is not working. They said, send me an email. They give you their email is bot@gmail.com, not at the bank secure email system. So you have data flying, you have personal information flying out there in the digital world. Yet, remember the last investigation carried out by an investigative journalist that said they could buy Nigerians' data on the dark web. How did that happen if the system is supposed to be secure?
What was your last word, bro?
My last word?
Yes.
God help us. No, really. My last word is we have to invest into the system what we hope to get out of it. Right now, what you see happening is because from the top to the bottom, whether the bottom is myself not changing my password, or the bank not putting proper cybersecurity measures in place, or the regulators not enforcing their policies or the penalties are not high enough. We're not investing, or the government not investing in the educational system to make it easier for those who are out there to have an understanding what their rights are. We have to put our money where our mouth is. We have to invest in what we complain about. That's my last word.
Thank you so much, Prof, for coming. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been an honor speaking to our guest, Professor Chiso Ndukwe Okafor, the Executive Director of Consumer Advocacy and Empowerment Foundation, CADEF, Nigeria. Prof, we look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much, Prof.
To learn more about AFINA, a financial sector deepening organization seeking to facilitate an inclusive market that works for all Nigerians, please visit www.efina.org.ng.